This is Terry Fenneman. Today is July 15th, 2020. I am interviewing Jeannie Roberts, a news reporter for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage Oral History Project. So why don't you start out telling us a little bit about your journalism career and how long you've worked in journalism?
Okay. I would say that it's been about 30 years. I don't know the exact date. I started at a little newspaper in the Delta in South Arkansas. It was called the Stuttgart Daily Leader. It was the only newspaper in town. The only opening that they had was as an ad designer. So I started there, and it wasn't too long before the publisher moved me up to a reporter. From the Stuttgart Daily Leader, which gave me such immense, experience, because you have to cover everything when you're at a small newspaper. I went from there to a weekly newspaper and as the editor in Central Arkansas. And then from there, I went to the Pine Bluff Commercial, which was a lot bigger, market and everything there. And then from there, it was to the to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Okay. And so how long have you been there now?
About 6 years now.
What is your newspaper circulation?
I'm not sure exactly. I think it's about 200,000.
And how many people are in your newsroom?
Again, I'm not sure exactly. I know that we probably have about 100 reporters scattered. The majority there in the newsroom and then some out in bureaus.
And who owns the paper?
It's a company called Waco, which it's spelled W-E-H-C-O, Waco Media Incorporated. The actual owner is Walter Hussman.
When did you notice the impact of COVID on your newspaper starting?
It was almost immediately. I would say, around March, because that was our first case, was March 1st. It was probably about March 11th. And then our newspaper, our newsroom just kind of sprung into action, realized that, hey, this is going to turn things upside down in our reporting, and we've got to get on top of this. We have a job to do. We don't know what that job is, don't know how to do that job, but, with everything new that was coming at us. And I remember just immediately springing into action and my editor saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. What are your ideas? But within a day or two, most of the newsroom employees were packing up computers and heading home, to work from home.
And what is your editor's name?
Allison Hogue, and that's AlysonHogue.
So besides working from home, how else has your newsroom adjusted their routines during the pandemic?
Well, there's a lot of, I think the main thing that they were worried about is communication, like between the reporters, between the editors, the management, et cetera, and making sure that we have our act together. So we had to learn a lot. Some people that weren't used to communicating through social media like Slack, and I don't know if that's considered social media, but, we instituted a Slack channel so everybody can have real-time communication. The meetings were held, I'm talking about the editorial meetings and such, were held remotely. So, you're used to being in a room with the facial expressions, with, the emphasis being on everything. So it was kind of an adjustment, I believe, to make sure that you were expressing things right and getting it in there. We had to go out into it. We took precautions. The newsroom made sure, instantly put together some PPE packs for us, mask, gloves, things like that, and gave us directions of you have to be careful. You have to take precautions. And I know some of my very first assignments were at actual testing sites, at the hospitals. And I was sitting there with my mask and my gloves on, facing people that were looked like they were from a science fiction movie. And so it was quite interesting.
How did you feel about that? Were you scared at all about having to cover that?
Well, I mean, as journalists, we're always, throughout my career, have been put into just surprising situations, strange situations, things like that. And this was sort of like that, but kind of on steroids. I remember the first time that I was sent to a hospital, and they had that, the huge tent, set up, and all of the outfits and stuff. And I remember I just stopped. Usually, journalists, they're kind of like, it's almost like a fireman, you're running towards the fire. And with this, I remember getting almost there in the parking lot and just stopping the very first time. And I just stopped and I just stood there and I was just staring at this whole, scene in front of me. And I was instantly, taken to where it was scary. I was like, what am I doing? And what it reminded me of is whenever the AIDS epidemic, first hit and I was reporting, I remember having that same reaction of, what am I doing to myself? What is this danger? And just kind of that, my heart stopping, basically, if that makes sense.
How did you get past that?
Well, I mean, you have a job to do, and journalists are almost have to be born for this job to push through that fear. And you have a job to do, and you have a state and a people to, not to sound too hokey, but to protect and give them information and everything. And there's some excitement too. I mean, I'm going to admit that there's some excitement of being a part of history. And everything. So I pushed forward. I just pushed myself forward, much like I did in the AIDS epidemic, whenever I was interviewing AIDS patients and things like that. I just pushed myself through and got through the fear and said, hey, I have a job to do. And everything else will just let fall where it may.
So, what city are you based in?
I'm in Little Rock. I cover a lot of Conway, which is close to Central Arkansas.
So, what is the pandemic like in both of those communities, and how many cases have there been?
I don't know the exact cases. I think we're almost up to 30,000 statewide, as far as cases. I think in Conway or Faulkner County, it's like, gosh, I don't know. I think it's like 1,500 cases. It's a pretty high thing. Pulaski County, I would say, is right about 4,000 cases.
How seriously do you think your area is taking the pandemic?
Oh gosh. I would say that some of them are taking it very, very seriously. There's a large portion, I don't want to say, yeah, there's a large portion that's taking it very seriously. They're wearing the mask, they're doing the social distancing, they're quarantining and everything, taking it very seriously. But then there's a large portion that is not taking it seriously at all. They think it's a hoax. They blame the media. The media is just feeding this all to us and creating drama, and everything. It's just these outlandish conspiracy theories, and and the masks don't work. It's been proven. And so you get all of these stories that they're reading, and stuff that they post all over social media and things like that. But you walk into a store and very few are wearing masks. Very few. And our cases, I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen the numbers, but we're getting triple digits, almost, 1,000 cases daily.
Talk a little more about how you've personally adjusted to being a journalist during the pandemic, as far as trying to juggle working from home now, any family, pets, how is that going?
Well, I think the first thing was kind of learning to work from home. I have always said that, oh my gosh, I would love to work from home and, and have that benefit because it's hard when you're in a big newsroom to focus. And I think you'll find that with a lot of journalists is that we're always almost ADHD, where anything can take our focus away and everything. So, I always said that I wanted to try to work from home and everything. And I found at the beginning, I'm a foster mother. I have four kids, and they need and want attention a lot. So in the beginning, they were, oh, party time, mom's home, and stuff. So it was kind of hard to adjust to teaching them that, hey, I'm working, and taking care of their needs and everything like that. So it was a little bit hard, but then we got into a routine and I guess as they got more secure too, but just mainly the routine. And so I'm able to focus more, I think now than when I was in the newsroom. And I know that definitely I'm producing. I feel more productive. And that may be because our news coverage and the amount of reporting that we do has, I mean, just tripled, because we're covering a pandemic and there's so many different directions you can go that are there. So the work has really tripled. It's more in depth, it's more data filled. And again, I'm talking about my experience. I'm not sure of the experience of others, but I know with me, like hey, let's do a thing on the testing. Let's do a story on the testing. The governor's saying that, oh, it's increased testing, but are we really increasing that testing? So I went, deep into the data, and we had low testing numbers. There's a lot of data involved. There's it's complicated and a lot of talking to a lot of different people. You're having to do those interviews in all different ways. I mean, that I think is what has changed the most is that we went from actually, I love face-to-face interviews and I haven't been able to do that. But that's what's changed the most is you're either doing it by phone. And I'm finding during this time that my phone interviews have reduced significantly. And that's because we're doing more of email interviews. And believe it or not, Facebook Messenger, I think, is my number one interview platform. And it, yeah, I mean, it's almost like I like it, and I think the people like it because it's a real-time conversation. Because it's I say something, they say something, vice versa, and it's real time. And also, on a selfish thing, it takes away the need to transcribe interviews, which every journalist hates.
So just for a quick follow-up, what is the age range of your kids?
I've got a 9-year-old, and then my oldest, she actually just turned 18.
So how have the number of hours you work each day been impacted by the pandemic?
Oh my gosh, they have increased significantly, which is, I mean, we have, obviously a 5-day work week. And then by day four, by the end of day four, my editor's going, you can't work on Monday. Our pay week goes from Tuesday to Monday. So by day four, and I'm I'm at home, but I'm working, late into the evening, 9, 10 o'clock, just to get the stories out there. A lot of the reports that we get from the Department of Health aren't sent until 4:30 or 5, or later. So you're in there later, but then you've got to be up in the morning covering meetings, covering, and being there for the interviews and stuff. So it makes for a long day. And and with the economics of a newspaper, especially now, over time they try to cut that out, completely. So that's hard to balance that.
So you mentioned, producing triple the amount of stuff. So how has the news strategy for your newsroom changed, as far as print, online, and social media?
Well, we have gone to basically all, and I want to make sure that I'm saying this right, but we are pretty much all digital right now, except for the Sunday newspaper. We went through that transition, but we started that, a year before the pandemic hit, where we were transitioning to digital.
For those listening to this later, why don't you talk about that in the iPad program?
And the iPad program, it's been so interesting to watch. And I know that kind of there was like almost a panic whenever it was announced in the newsroom, like, oh my gosh, this is beginning of the end, and everything. But for me, it was kind of, I mean, there was that, but then there was also excitement of here's a challenge, here's a challenge that we can help. And let's see, how good we can rock this, and everything. And it ended up being very exciting. It was exciting to the news format. The design is just, we have such talented designers, and that transferred online and everything. And also just seeing the fight. I mean, I was in the Capitol reporting during the legislative session, and I couldn't get on the elevator without somebody complaining about the iPads. This was in the beginning of it. And then now it's like we've got, 97-year-old men who are just excited about it. And, we're because we have people that go in and show them how to use it. And so we're turned around to where it's pretty much an overwhelming positive thing, to where they can pull it up, they can, expand the print, they can, it's all right there. It looks like a real newspaper. I don't know if you've looked at it or not, but online it's a replica of a real newspaper, and you can click on that story
Why don't you tell us a little bit
and bring
about
it up.
the fundamentals of the program? Is it everybody who subscribes gets a free iPad?
Yes, it is. And I don't want to say anything, because that's not my area, but yes, if you subscribe to that, it was basically trade us your paper newspaper for an iPad, and we'll help you make that transition. So yes, it is that. So I'm sure that we have a room with stacks and stacks of iPads somewhere. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's there.
How has your newsroom tried to balance pandemic coverage while still covering other things?
That's been difficult, especially for me. And it's interesting that you bring it up because you have a major thing going on in your state, in the world, and everything. But where does the local city council meeting come in, and everything like that? And it is hard to balance that. But I've found that it's almost, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but when I get the city council meeting or something like that, it's almost taken an R&R, of, hey, here's something that I know it's going to start with, adjourning the meeting, and we know where it's going. We have an agenda. It's all spelled out. You could practically write the story while you're in there. So it's almost like a break. So I do try, and I'm sure, all of we're getting really good news coverage. So my colleagues are working really hard as well to kind of balance that.
So we talked a little bit about some of the stories that you've covered. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is I heard that you've been writing quite a few of the COVID obituaries, and I'd like you to talk about that.
Well, how it starts is that we get a report, a coroner's report, and these coroner's reports are only on COVID-19 as the cause of death. And so we take that report, and the idea is to make them more than just a statistic, turn them, not turn them into real people, but unveil that real person behind there. And we put that every day we have a 1A story that focuses on what happened the day before, as far as the COVID-19, the governor's conference that he puts on every day, anything new that came up. It's just this one big story. And that's where we put these stories, these kind of feature obits is in there. So they can be anywhere from a few graphs to, 19 inches long. But what I do is I take these coroner's reports, and they always have a next of kin listed. So I start out by calling the next of kin. And it can be, it's a little awkward. I'll call and I'll say, first of all, you're calling them during a very hard time in their life, a very painful time in their life. So, what do you say? I almost sound, in the beginning, I was like, I sound like a salesman almost. And that was kind of an, no offense to salespeople, but kind of an icky feeling. And so I had to convince myself, or tell myself, hey, there's a reason why you're doing this. There's a reason. This is putting a face on a virus that a lot of people say aren't real, and the cases are made up. But hey, here's a lady that, served in the school lunchroom for 30 years and was famous for her cinnamon rolls. Here's the face of this virus. So I would tell them, first of all, I'm very, very sorry for your loss. And then I would go in and I would explain, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what we want to do. We want people to know your Aunt Vicky and, her sense of humor and who she was in life. And I would say that overall the result was positive. The response was, yes, I would love to. And then it would start with, they would just it would just roll from there, mainly with a few okays and stuff thrown in there from me, but they would just roll out the stories, and I would listen to them and then take that interview and turn it into kind of an a biography, and it would be included in the main story. But and on the other side, I've gotten some negative responses too, and those were kind of painful. You're always on the edge as a journalist of am I, hurting people during their most vulnerable time, or am I helping them? And I would get chewed out, called names, things like that. And I'm a sensitive person. Which works for me in journalism and works against me. So, yeah, so it would hurt, but I would go on to the next person.
So when you say go on to the next person, do you mean another relative for that same person, or just not write an obituary altogether for that person?
Just another obituary altogether. Normally in feature obits, which I've written a lot in my career, you interview several people. But with these, we're just getting a hold of the next of kin, that one source, that can tell us a little bit more about them. So, and if the family doesn't want to talk, and this was a difficult part of it for me because if the family doesn't want to talk, because I've had family say, you cannot use my uncle's name, you cannot put it in the newspaper. Well, the newspaper policy is, yes, we do. It's open under the Freedom of Information, it's public information. We don't write a whole big story about them, but we say, Joe Smith died Wednesday from COVID-19. And we've had some internal discussions about that, about what should we do. Should we only be publishing the stories of people who agree to it, to their family, to the families agree to it? And in the end, it was the policy stays the same.
So, how many of these COVID feature obits do you think you've written in the last few months?
In the last few months, I'd say about 40, 50. That's kind of a low number, I think, because we didn't start that right at the beginning. I think we were a month or so into the pandemic before we started. Yeah, and another thing, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of you here, but another thing is that we've started doing is that once a month, we, these stories on a daily basis are buried inside a bigger story. So once a month, the projects team takes all of the stories that I write, any more that they're able to get, and we do a and we get collect pictures from family members, and we do a special report on it once a month of the victims of COVID-19. And it's been very, very well received.
So you mentioned that you've written feature obits, for a while now, but how is it to write these? I mean, with journalists, when we do trauma reporting, it tends to be in a very limited amount of time, and it can still take a tremendous mental health toll. What kind of personal
Yeah.
impact do you think that this is having on you to have to do these all the time?
It's I'm very much an empath. Like I said, that can be to my advantage as a reporter, but it can also be to my detriment. I feel these emotions. I feel the pain that the families are going through, and I look at this overall picture of just the death and the illness, surrounding us, and it does bring you down. It does break your heart. And then I know that one that really got to me, it was a Down syndrome man who passed away from COVID-19. And that got to me because, I have a 3-year-old niece with Down syndrome, and she's vulnerable. She's very vulnerable to this disease. And just getting that one, that was the one that really just broke my heart. And it brought the reality to me of just how vulnerable my niece is, and just how vulnerable, and I also, have a 73-year-old mother who is in the middle of breast cancer. So you hear all of these stories, and it does make you think of personal things, and you do feel the pain that these families are expressing as well. And then one of the most heartbreaking things about these stories is that all of these people died alone. The family was not able to be there, was not allowed to be there. So they talk about the last time that they saw their loved one. I kissed her on the cheek in March, and I haven't didn't never see her again. Because of the requirements and the restrictions in the hospital. They went on a ventilator, and I was never able to see or talk to them on the phone again until they passed away. So you can feel that very real, deep loss and just the injustice of it. Just the thought of someone dying alone, it's heartbreaking and devastating. I'm getting emotional.
Has your newsroom had any discussions with the reporters about getting any mental health help at all?
No, we haven't. We haven't. My editor will ask me, how are you doing? Things like that. But as far as overall discussions about mental health, no, we haven't.
Do you think it's something that the journalism industry as a whole should be talking about more right now?
Yeah, I really do. During my career, I've gone through some pretty horrific, scenes and experiences and things, and that has always been something that I thought that the news media lacks, is that they need to be looking more at the mental health of their reporters and at least having them talk about it, that it's not just, it just doesn't stop at just a job. You're a person and you have these emotions and they impact you. So, yeah, I do believe that it needs to be done more.
Switching to a little bit of a different kind of mental health stress, talk about the financial situation at the newspaper and declines in advertising, any layoffs, furloughs, salary cuts. What have things been like with your newspaper as far as that?
Yeah, I was again, I'm not privy to a lot of that information. I know that whenever I don't know the date, I know that it was right after it started, probably about a month afterwards. We got the email saying, "Hey, we're looking for volunteers for either, full-time furloughs or you can go part-time if you're full-time, or you can voluntarily reduce your salary," and saying that the advertising had, dropped off, a cliff basically, and everything. And it was something I think that everybody expected because the state was shut down, businesses aren't advertising, things like that. But I actually volunteered to reduce to part time, and everything, and several, and they got a lot of volunteers to do, some of the full time furloughs and everything. And I went part time, and I think it lasted maybe 2 weeks before they said you can't go part time. So, and so it's, we got part of, and I'm probably talking beyond my knowledge, but we did get some COVID relief funds, the newspaper as a whole, and they were able to call back everybody from furlough. And I am waiting for the ball to drop, I guess, because I know that it's coming. I think that we will not recover from this and be normal, what normal was ever again.
So going off of that, how do you see the business model for the industry changing as a result of this?
Well, I mean, when I first started in journalism, I mean, again, that was like 30 years ago, I got the usual, stick of, "Oh my gosh, you're going into a dying industry. You might want to try a different, field, and it's not going to last, and everything." And, here I am 30 years later, and we're reinventing ourselves, continuing to reinvent ourselves. So part of me is cheering us on, saying, "Yeah, we're gonna do this." But the fact is, looking nationwide, is that there has been no newspaper, company that has successfully made that transition from into totally digital. And I know that we've had some successes, but the fact is that you get paid more for paper advertising than you do for online. And online advertising, it's so oversaturated that the rates are so low. You can, buy an ad anywhere, for next to nothing when it's online. So I don't know what that answer is. And me looking forward, I keep thinking, I guess if I had the answer, then, I would be saving the world. But I don't have the answer, and I can't foresee it in my mind of how are we going to survive this? Because you have to have money. You have to have money to run a news organization, even when it's totally online.
Going past the financials, how do you think the pandemic is changing journalism?
First of all, with this reporting, there is one major difference in this reporting on the pandemic versus, your normal, is that the information changes moment by moment. I mean, like with the on the testing story, and I'm trying to do a follow-up on the testing story, and it's like as soon as I get, a subhead written, it's the information has changed and it's completely made what I wrote irrelevant. So it's you really have to be on your game, ahead of your game, when it's impossible to be that, just because of the rate of the change. And nobody knows what this pandemic is totally, and it just changes, and there's impacts, and there's things happening constantly. So it's hard to write something today for tomorrow's paper, for tomorrow's edition.
What innovations have you or your newspaper undergone that you think have been beneficial?
I know that we've started something new with, up in the northwest part of the state, we have a large Marshallese population. We have a large Hispanic population. And this pandemic, this virus is impacting them, fourfold what it does, the white population. And it's, a lot of it is in the businesses that are up there, the poultry plants, the manufacturers where, business must go on, and everything. And one of the things that we've done there to keep them informed is, we offer a translation, our news in translation in Marshallese as well as Spanish, and we post that all the time. So just as a different way to keep them informed. We also, I know that we do this one thing about like five things you need to know about COVID-19, and that changes, just kind of giving more information. And I think that we're seeing our role in this as information, is we give readers as much information as we can about the pandemic, because it's vital to their health and their safety. So we look at every aspect, and we also try to get the human interest side of it. The little old ladies at a church that are making masks, by the hundreds, for free, things like that. The recoveries, the survivals, things like that. We're trying to get at the human interest. What does this look like out on the front lines? We're trying to get all that, but the basic thing is really to keep them informed. And like I said, this disease is changing, the everything's changing in an instant. So it's difficult.
What changes, if any, have you noticed with your reader base during the pandemic?
I'm not sure if I have noticed any changes. I know we're seeing a lot more engagement from younger people. And this is just me kind of talking off the top of my head, but I think it runs the gamut. I think it runs all ages. We are seeing a lot more engagement on like Twitter or something. I'll post something and then there'll be response, response, response in the conversation. And thank you for giving this to us. And I've never really seen that before. There's been a lot more of the interaction. I think people are so desperate for information on this. because there's nothing to hold on to. It's an ever-changing pandemic.
What changes to your newspaper operations during the pandemic do you expect will continue after it's over?
I'm hoping the work from home will continue. I mean, that was a strict policy, before the pandemic, is that they had a bad experience way back in the past with trying to work from home. And so, we've actually, in the time that I've been there, have thought about, putting together a program to kind of pitch to them, hey, let us work from home. And then the pandemic hit, and suddenly we were all working from home. So I'm hoping that they can see the benefits from it, and how we've proven ourselves, and to continue that. I don't know what to expect, but that's one of it that I'm hoping to continue. I think that there will be more, which we're heavy on data journalism anyway, but I think that this has kind of proven that it's needed even more, and the importance of it, of looking at these numbers and not just accepting what officials give us. Which we've been great at that, before this, but even now, after this, it's just been, threefold that we've had to up our game.
What changes to your newspaper operations during the pandemic are you most ready to just be over?
That's kind of hard, because I think the changes have been positive. And so, you do get a little bit of the wish you could interact more. A little bit of that of wish you could just be in the middle of the newsroom, this loud, noisy, irreverent newsroom, and laughing and everything like that. I went in the other last week, and it was just like a morgue. I had to go in and my computer keyboard stopped working. So I had to go in and drop it off in this huge newsroom, and it was just silence, and computers had been, I don't want to say ripped out of the desk, but they took their computers home and everything. So it was just this vast silence, this vast nothingness. And so, the culture of the newsroom is kind of iconic. So, it's I like being a part of that sometimes.
How has the pandemic influenced your views of the role of journalism in society?
I think it's vital. I mean, I've always thought that journalism was vital to our freedoms, to fight against wrong information, everything. And I think it's even more vital now. We're facing something that no journalist before us has faced, and that is with all this credible information that we put out there, there's 10 times more junk news, 10 times more political publications put out that are spin, that have the spin on it and just outright outlandish claims, so we're fighting that. And we're like a small army facing a huge, army, if that makes sense. And that's different, which that has been changing for a little while, even before, the pandemic hit. But especially now, I can post a story and then you get somebody saying that's all just a lie, and is this the truth or are you lying again? Or, something like that. It can get brutal.
So going off of that, what do you want readers to know about journalism right now?
Well, we're getting a bum rap. And I feel like I am kind of fighting this battle all the time. I want readers to know that we're largely a group with impeccable integrity. And again, I know that there's, bad apples in every group, but largely We're pretty, I don't know any journalist who doesn't have integrity and purpose at their very heart and who would do anything to put the correct and the news out there. And we fight daily to get the truth, rigorous honesty. And we have to fight through a lot of curtains, a lot of closed doors, a lot of spin, to get to that. But I think integrity kind of encapsulates all of us out there. And it's not for, we get told, hey, you're just wanting to sell more newspapers and things like that. If they knew the news, a journalist's salary, they wouldn't say that. But, we have to fight against that all the time. And that's not our motivation. Our motivation is to help, is to, save the world. That's what we were thinking as kids, hey, we're going to make a difference, and we're going to help. And we do that with putting the truth out there and telling these stories.
What do you want journalists 100 years from now who may be covering a new pandemic? What do you want them to know?
Uncover the layers and get to the truth. I mean, don't just accept what, no matter how much you trust that public official, things like that, don't just accept that. Keep digging. Also, the one thing that's been the hardest about this is that journalists need to be out in it, to record the truth, to see what it's like, and do that as much as you can while still trying to stay safe. You need to be out on those front lines. You need to see the truth to report the truth.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Not really. I mean, it's difficult. It's a difficult subject. It's difficult in what I do with the covering of the deaths and the anger, sometimes that you get and everything. I mean, I had one family, that I wrote about their son anyway, and they posted all over, just attacking me and attacking me, saying that everything was a lie and, and don't trust this reporter and everything. They were mad that we reported it without their consent, even though we tried, to get their consent just because of that policy. And so that was very difficult, but you're going to have to push through those types of things, and you're going to have to hold your head high and or put your head down and just work. Just work it. Just push through.
Okay, this is the conclusion of this oral history.